Hello and welcome to the Transatlantic Talks podcast series, which is hosted by the Austrian Institute for European and Security Policy together with the Young Transatlantic Initiative in Vienna. My name is Michael Sinkenel. I'm the director of the Austrian Institute for European and Security Policy, the AIES, and this podcast series on transatlantic relations, the US elections, and implications is also supported by the US Embassy here in Vienna, Austria. Today, we would like to talk in a bipartisan dialogue on the implications of the US elections 2024, implications on domestic and foreign policies with our two distinguished guests, which I'd like to introduce. We're joined today by Mark Pfeifel. He's the founder and president of the strategy and communications firm Off the Records Strategies. Mark has previously worked as deputy assistant to the president and the deputy national security advisor for strategic communication and global outreach at the White House. Thank you, Mark, for being with us.
Thank you.
And our second guest today is Jason Altmaier. Jason has served three times as a U.S. congressman at the U.S. House of Representatives from 2007 until 2013, and currently is leading a public affairs consultant. Thank you very much, Jason, also for joining us today.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Wonderful. I'd like to start today with just an overview on the U.S. elections, which will take place just in a couple of days from this recording and when this podcast episode is going to be featured and published. So basically looking at the US elections, we are wondering, of course, what would be the most pivotal possible changes and challenges for these elections. And from a European, from an EU perspective, we're of course also interested to hear from you two experts on the US, on the elections as well. What are some of the most important issues or motives for voters which they might be focusing on, and especially if national security considerations play an important role in these elections?
I think the biggest change that this election would represent is we will have a new American president. Either way, President Biden is not running for re-election, so we will either have Vice President Kamala Harris become the new president. She would be the first woman president in American history. Or we will have former President Donald Trump return to office after losing the 2020 election. He will have his second term, and he would be the second president in American history to serve non-consecutive terms. And it wasn't until the late 1800s, you have to go back to find another time where that's happened. And they have very different views about domestic policy, very different views about foreign affairs and America's relationship in the world. And they, of course, have very different styles, and the way that they behave as political candidates is very different. So that's the biggest change. Also important in America is who controls the United States Congress. And so that you have the House and the Senate, both of them could go either way. Currently, the Republicans control the House and the Democrats control the Senate. It appears very likely Republicans will retake control of the U.S. Senate. And then I would say the U.S. House control is up for grabs. It could go either way. And if you have a President Trump in office, he would have a Republican Senate. If the Republicans maintain control of the House, he would be in very strong position to be able to carry out a lot of his priorities. So for those who may be concerned about some of the things that he says, if that scenario plays out, he would be in position to actually do and implement some of those policies. So to the degree that affects foreign affairs, the European Union here in Austria, I think that is going to make a big difference who controls the Congress in addition to who wins the presidency.
Thanks a lot, Jason, for also pointing out this differentiation between those two chambers. And it's, of course, important to look not only who wins the presidency, but also who will be in charge of the Senate and the House. So, Mark, probably I'd like to follow up on the question, especially when it comes to this national security aspect. Yeah? Do you think that this plays an important role in the current election, especially in the motive of voters?
I think to a point it does, Michael. And thanks for having us on your podcast and hosting us at your great think tank in Austria. It does, but I think that for the most part, from an international relations standpoint and a foreign policy and a national security standpoint, we won't see a great deal of difference. We still have the same opponents internationally. We're still going to have to deal with an issue of trade and a growing belligerence from China, for example, and protecting Taiwan. The Middle East will still be an enormous challenge between Israel and Palestinians and Gaza and Hezbollah and all the tragic situation that's going on there. I think at the same time, there will naturally come to an end at some point in the war between Russia and Ukraine. It'll just happen. Will it happen quickly? I think it'll happen more quickly under a potential Trump administration than it might a Harris administration. Then we have the enormous challenges with cybersecurity, with the evolution of artificial intelligence. You know, that's going to happen no matter who is in the Oval Office and in the White House. The challenge will be, I think, that, as Jason said, dramatically different styles of leadership, with Trump, who has a more vocal, maybe he's a bit distasteful to some areas of the United States population and some of his activities and some of the things that he says, with Harris, who I think is a bit more of an unknown. I think with Trump, he pretty much tells you exactly what he's going to do, how he's going to do it, why he wants to do it. With Harris, it's been a little bit more isolated and fewer unscripted public possibilities to know exactly. But I think if you go on one, some of the things she said publicly and as the 4 years as vice president, you get a good roadmap of where she's going. So in the United States, we're very polarized right now. That's the unfortunate thing. Disinformation, misinformation are trying to separate us. A lot of times the political entities play into that. We've got a lot of challenges in America from a demographic standpoint, religious challenges, socioeconomic challenges and disparity between incomes, different parts of our segment when it comes to race or other things like that, that we have to heal and we've got to find some solutions to. I hope that whoever wins the presidency, we can find some continuity to move forward for the next 4 years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thanks a lot for that oversight and for that insight, especially in the different styles of leadership, of course, matter and will translate in potentially different styles of policies, different policy priorities. But I'd like to a little bit tap into what you just mentioned with regards to disinformation and these kind of new threats also in the field of artificial intelligence mixed with disinformation, because also here in Europe we hear growing concern about electoral integrity, not only but also related to disinformation campaigns that are being waged now before the US elections to sway public opinion probably in one or the other way, or to further fuel this polarization that you also mentioned. So keeping that under consideration, do you see that there's a considerable threat to election influence, to basically try to influence the election by any foreign influence, by any foreign actors?
So I think that there is, and you know, we look, sometimes we kind of laugh at it because we see it. You know, what we see of like the Taylor Swift for Trump and how that is so obvious in artificial intelligence play. You know, mm-hmm. You have these young blonde females with these Trump t-shirts, and it's so obvious that it's an artificial intelligence creation to us. Mm-hmm. And we can see some of those things. What we can't see is how, in some instances, we have the Russians and the Chinese and the Iranians maybe not working in concert together, but definitely using their information operations and their disinformation teams to find different ways to influence us, using social media, using fake websites, taking some elements, like I said, of our society and our disparities, and finding ways to just poke a hole in it, mm-hmm. to try and drive us apart. I don't think it's as prevalent as it was in 2016, when you had complete operations in large buildings in Russia that were actively using Facebook, that were actively using Instagram, that were using elements of Twitter to get bots and get teams together and setting up fake events and setting up real situations that were happening. What we can see in some instances is the use of voice technology. They could take our voices, Jason and mine, who have thousands of hours of talking publicly, and take it and make it into a statement, and yours as well, doing this podcast, take our statements and our voices and turn it into something completely different from what we would actually say. And you can do that now so easily. Mm-hmm. And that's the challenge. We have to increase the amount of media literacy that we're doing in early on in our schooling and our education system. And we have to look at a variety of media in our lives. So we don't just listen to things that I agree with or read things that are in my information stream or that agree with my ideology, but you've got to test your boundaries so that you're listening to things that you don't always disagree with or you don't always agree with, and that will help to shape you and our society in a way that we can actually deal and be resilient for this disinformation.
Mm-hmm. Jason, I'd like to also ask you, what would you see as the biggest challenge domestically that the next U.S. president is going to face, regardless of who is going to win, also related to domestic security and national security?
I think what Mark was just talking about with regard to artificial intelligence is very important, because it's so pervasive and it affects every aspect of business, of politics, of everyday Americans. And what he described is true, where you can... Today, we're talking about the technology as it exists today, and it's going to evolve and become even more so. You can take a video of a person and have it appear very believably and realistically that they're saying something that they clearly aren't saying and would not say. And a problem that we have, and this isn't just in America, but it's a big problem in America, is people segregate their sources of information. So they watch the news information on television, the news network, that will tell them what they want to hear. And they won't listen to the other side. And they have social media feeds, whether it be Twitter or X or YouTube or TikTok or Facebook. And the algorithm will direct them only to information that they support. They won't hear another point of view. And you, in that scenario, will not be exposed to the fact check or the correction that video you just saw of a celebrity endorsing a candidate that they have not really endorsed, or even worse, a political candidate saying something that they didn't really say, it never makes it back to you that that's fake. Mm-hmm. That's fraudulent. And that's a big problem, because you can figure out that this isn't real and you can put out information, oh, that's just a fake. But if the voter doesn't see that correction, that's going to influence their behavior. Mm-hmm.
So I understood you correctly that you also see this development, AI-induced disinformation, filter bubbles in social media, polarization, manipulation, as one of the biggest domestic challenges that the new president is going to face within the States.
I think it will affect all domestic policy. Things in America that will be on the policy agenda of the next president will be the future of the healthcare reform initiative that President Obama passed, which is still somewhat to expand it, somewhat to pull back and even repeal it. That's going to be a big issue. Economic issues like taxation, business taxes and individual taxes are going to be big issues in America. An issue for Democrats is climate change. Republicans don't focus as much on that issue. And if a scenario plays out where Republicans are in charge of the political process, you probably won't see much action on climate change. And you might even see things like coal and natural gas production increase, perhaps offshore oil drilling, reopening different national parks and the Alaskan National Wildlife Refuge for drilling. That could happen under a Republican administration, whereas a Democratic administration under Vice President Harris would be much more restrictive of things like that and engage global partners much more aggressively on an issue like climate change.
Mm-hmm. Moving probably back to foreign policies, we have mentioned some implications that the U.S. elections might have on foreign policy priorities. Mark, can you give us probably just your two cents when it comes to U.S.-China relations, yeah, in terms of geopolitical issues, economic developments? This is, of course, also an issue that we here in Europe take very seriously. I suppose the next U.S. president will also shape this U.S.-China almost conflict or issue even further, or has to deal with it in one or the other way. Can you give us your insights on how you see the new U.S. president dealing with China?
So a lot of it came to the forefront during the COVID pandemic and the supply chain challenges and the roots of the COVID pandemic that came all across the world. It kind of refocused or shaped the need for a better supply chain, for more things to be created nationally in the U.S. And especially that gave former President Trump a real campaign issue. He wants to focus more on China and specifically the relationship with China. Our two economies and the economies of Europe as well are intertwined with China. They can't be separated at this point. We're too interrelated. But what we do have is a challenge of China playing really a long game. In the U.S., we go 2 years and 4 years with new presidents, new congresses, and China just keeps kind of marching on, incrementally making it difficult in the region. It's made the U.S. have to focus on relations with Asian countries that we haven't always had real strong relationships with, such as Vietnam. And it's made us reinforce our relationships with places that we have had a strong relationship with, such as Australia and Japan and South Korea, and real focus on it. I think the challenge is then what happens is, boom, Russia, Ukraine, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Then the attack on Israel by Hamas in October of last year. Then, so it takes all that pressure and all that oxygen out of the foreign policy world to deal with these other issues that come up, and the China issue continues to fester and continues to be a problem that the U.S. and our allies will have to work with in the decades ahead.
You know what Mark said about China and them thinking forward in the future? It reminds me of a very famous story of when President Nixon was in office in the United States. He very famously went to China. This is in the 1970s, the early 1970s. And the Secretary of State, Henry Kissinger, was sitting at dinner with his counterpart in China, Chou Enlai. And they were having a conversation, and Secretary Kissinger asked him, "What do you think the long-term impact is of the French Revolution, which had happened 200 years before?" And Chou Enlai was not joking when he responded and said, "It's too soon to tell." And that is the way that China thinks. And what's important about that is that's not the way the American voter thinks. Mm-hmm. They think about what's happening right now. What are the decisions that are being made, and how is it going to affect me tomorrow? That's how the American voter thinks. That is not generally how the Chinese think. The Chinese are very strategic in their political decisions, in their strategy. And when you put those two things together, it's very important to have leadership in the United States and around the world that understands that mentality as it exists, because that is going to be a rivalry that plays out for decades to come. Mm-hmm.
In our final segment of maybe, if we have time, one or two additional questions, I'd like to come back to transatlantic relationship, yeah? Especially looking ahead, to some extent, I believe we can already foresee some shifts, some potential shifts in transatlantic development, again, despite the fact who is going to be the next president in the White House. So probably I can ask both of you how you can see or potentially foresee a weakening or a break in European-US relations, and what factors might drive such a European-US divide, such a transatlantic divide in the future, or better put, how Europe can also prepare for such an eventuality to take place.
The two candidates for president have very different points of view on that issue and that question that you just asked. President Trump, former President Trump, is of the mindset that he and his administration would put America first. And the way he defines that is the financial commitments that America has made in the transatlantic relationships that have been developed, the relationship with NATO, of course, based in New York City in America. He's been very vocal about the fact that he would like the countries that are participants to pay more to be a part of that, that America should not pay as much to support other nations. That is something that will directly impact Austria and the European Union and other nations around the world. And the ability to come together should there be a situation around the world, as happened with Ukraine and Russia, would be diminished, greatly diminished, I believe, under a President Trump, because he doesn't seem to be one that would make it a priority to bring the world together in that circumstance, as, for example, the first President Bush did in America during Iraq and the Kuwait issue of the early 1990s, very famously worked hard to bring other countries together before action was taken. President Trump seems to be of the mindset that whatever America wants to do, America should be able to do, regardless of what anybody else thinks about it. I think Vice President Harris would take a very different approach and would be more engaging of other nations, and certainly would be more supportive of the structure of the UN and America's relationship with the European Union.
Okay, Mark, do you want to also...
I think that there's a movement in the U.S., especially with some of the current Republican leadership, to move it to more of a relationship between countries and less of an alliance with organizations like NATO or the EU. And that's something that, you know, probably individual countries in Europe have to deal with that possibility. Trump wants to work directly with Austria. He wants to work directly with France. He wants to work directly... And he sees that as a strategic advantage for him and what he wants to do. And so that's a potential movement. At the same time, the U.S. has to have a strong Europe from a trade standpoint, from an international relations standpoint of working with allies on large global issues, whether it's Iran or it's China or whatever it might be. What we can't foresee is the challenge. And so we need Europe as well to focus on what are you doing to make yourself stronger? How are we finding ways that we have an aging population in the U.S., we have an aging population in Europe. We have fewer workers to retirees. That's an impending huge challenge that's going to come up in the next generation that could end a lot of our economic prosperity. We've got to find ways that no matter who the U.S. president is, whether it's Harris or Trump, or in the future, whoever it is, we've got to focus on those long-term strategic issues. Just like Jason said, with what how China is focused on that long game, we've got to start focusing on it as well. What are we going to do to bring potential new migrants into our systems in a way that's productive to help us so that we can create the prosperity and the wealth that we need in the future? What are we doing to use artificial intelligence to find ways to make healthcare more affordable and where we can increase our life expectancy as well? Those are the things that we've got to focus on. Yes, the United States and the world is focused on who's going to sit in the Oval Office starting in January of next year, and that's an important thing, and I think there's a lot of fraught dangers involved in that. But at the same time, we as societies, governments, civil societies, have to continue to be focused on these larger, bigger issues and control what we can control.
I think this is a perfect way also to sum up this conversation, because you're absolutely right. We're focusing a lot on who is going to sit in the White House, what are their policies going to look like, what are the effects, immediate effects, what is going to happen now and tomorrow, but probably to look more strategically into the long-term future is certainly a very important aspect to consider for democracies around the world, for European democracies, for the U.S., on issues like you mentioned, like AI, like climate, like security and defense. These are things that we're going to deal with, all of us, in one way or the other. And the sooner we prepare together for such challenges and for overcoming these challenges, also in a transatlantic way, the better. Yeah. So maybe despite the fact who is going to sit in the White House, their differences in style of leadership, working together is a necessity after all. Yeah. So I'd like to thank you for participating in this Transatlantic Talks podcast episode. Thanks so much for taking the time. Thanks so much for being with us, both to you, Mark, and Jason. So thank you for the time.
Thank you, Michael.
Happy to do it. Thank you.
Thank you.